This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
This is Mason Vera Payne, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. This is the last month of 2017, and joining me to discuss what movies we should close this year out with is managing editor at Movies.com and contributing editor at Fandango, Eric Davis. Thanks for joining me, Eric.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, man. So, Justice League. What did you think of Justice League? Because a lot of people out there, they weren't really happy about it.
You know, I thought Justice League was better than I thought it was going to be, honestly. You know, this is a film that we've been hearing for about a year now. Reshoots and changing directors, and Zack Snyder was the original director. Then they brought in Joss Whedon. And so I didn't know what this movie was going to look like when I sat down to watch it. But, you know, it's quick. It runs, a little, I think, around 2 hours. It's got a lot of action. It's got a lot of your favorite heroes sort of in suits fighting alongside each other. Thought the story was a little bit clunky narratively. I wasn't crazy about the villain, but I did like some elements of it, and I liked how they tried to inject some humor in a few of the moments. And so, you know, I think it was good. It wasn't great. I don't think it was as great as maybe people wanted it to be, maybe fans wanted it to be. But that being said, I still think there's a lot of material that they can mine with these characters, and you know, they'll get the right balance eventually. It's just about finding that.
Yeah, I'm hoping that Joss Whedon will be able to really push it forward, because he did wonders with the Marvel universe. So I'm hoping he can do the same with the DC one.
Yeah, perhaps if they keep him involved, you know, they could go in a completely different direction, which they may need to. You know, I really like what Marvel is doing, and they're trusting their directors, I think, more than they used to, and we're starting to see sort of more of the directors in the films, specifically Guardians of the Galaxy and James Gunn, Thor Ragnarok, and Taika Waititi. You know, we're starting to just really see the directors and their personalities and their tone, you know, arrive in these movies. And so I think that, you know, they could do that on the DC side. But then again, you want DC to maybe do something different than Marvel. The whole point of these superhero movies is that we want to keep seeing a different approach to them. You know, and so if DC just copies Marvel, we're not going to see that. So hopefully they'll find their own rhythm, their own tone, and their own balance, and their own sort of universe that they want to create, and then we'll go from there.
You know, it's so funny you're talking about different, and you're right. DC Universe should take this into a different direction. Yet they went and hired Joss Whedon, who was like, you know, he practically built the movies. Do you think that was wise if they're, you know, if they want to distinguish themselves from the Avengers series?
Well, I definitely think, you know, I think it was a smart move. I think Joss, you know, he brings some sort of a lighter tone to it, a lighter touch to it. And, you know, he really knows how to work with ensemble casts. I think that is the key. That is that's his strongest suit. A lot of people say that they bring in him to write the jokes, but not so much. I think he's really good at balancing that ensemble, making sure everybody has their moment. You know, if you look at that finale to the first Avengers movie, it's one of my favorite finales ever. That's his specialty, is being able to sort of keep the baton rolling between from hero to hero to hero, so everybody has their moment. And so I think it was a smart move to bring him in and kind of help finish it. I think that, you know, finding that balance between sort of gritty and sinister and a bit of a lighter tone, I think, you know, he did a good job with that.
I forgot, and I'm wrecking my brain trying to remember. Why did Joss Whedon leave the Marvel Universe?
I think some of these guys, they have contracts, and, you know, there was nothing nefarious about it. I think he just came to the end of his run. I think he did Avengers Age of Ultron, and, you know, wanted to sort of go out on that note. You know, those Avengers movies are difficult. You know, I think it took a lot out of him. I think he was maybe better off taking a rest, but obviously maybe he wants to get back into it now and on the DC side. Apparently he's doing the Batgirl movie too.
Oh, man, I can't wait for that. I mean, I love Josh Whedon's work. I'm a big fan of him all the way from when he was doing Roseanne. So he's really good in my eyes.
Yeah. I think he's just a really great writer, and he just really knows how to work with large casts. And so that's why I think he's the right man for the job.
You know, when it comes to large casts, Avengers Infinity War, the trailer came out, and my God, I mean, it's like everybody from the Marvel Universe there. What did you think of it?
I really like the Avengers Infinity War trailer. I think, you know, speaking of, really knowing their tone and really getting it down, Marvel really knows what they're doing. And, you know, this is going to be a hard film because there are a lot of heroes. I think they have, like, upwards of 50 heroes in this movie somehow. And so this is going to be a huge test to see if you can kind of tell a coherent story, you know, within 2.5 hours with all of these people. And I'm really curious to see how they do it. But, I mean, yeah, that trailer gets you excited, that's for sure.
Oh, man, you know, you said 50 heroes, and I thought to myself, like, man, and this is without the X-Men, too. So this is going to be, it's still action-packed and a lot of people in it.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be action-packed, and it's definitely, it looks like they have fun with it, and they have all the heroes kind of mixing and matching. I really like the action. I like the way Thanos looks. I'm looking forward to Josh Brolin playing him. You know, Josh Brolin playing two big Marvel characters next year, Thanos and then also Cable in the Deadpool sequel. And so this is going to be a big year for Josh Brolin in 2018.
Oh, man, speaking of 2018, I've read that there's going to be a new Halloween movie. And I read that this is going to be the true sequel. And that's where I get confused. You mean after all the Halloween movies that I watched, those aren't canon anymore?
You know, I guess that's kind of what they're trying to go for. But yeah, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, I don't know how many people are sort of looking at the Halloween series and saying, you know, oh God, now it's not canon. Halloween 3 is not canon. You know, I think they want to sort of bring it back and try to figure out, have a true sequel. You know, I thought it was interesting. They tried to, they finagled with that a bit. They did it with Superman. They tried to kind of say, let's forget about Superman 3 and Superman 4, and we'll do this new Superman. So, you know, sometimes that's good, sometimes it's bad. I think the films still exist. If you're a huge true fan of Halloween H2O, it's not like it disappears. But I do think that I think that Michael Myers is a popular character. I think they want to continue to do something different with him. I think, you know, David Gordon Green, who's directing it and writing it with Danny McBride, I think it's a really interesting sort of set of people, creative people that are behind it. And you know, they got the original sort of star of Halloween, Jamie Lee Curtis, to come back. So I'm curious. You know, I don't know how much room there is to play in these kinds of slasher movies because, you know, Michael Myers shows up, he kills people, and then they try to track him down. So, you know, I'm curious to see how they expand the mythology and in what ways. You know, Rob Zombie tried to do that, and people weren't so crazy about it. So, you know, how much can you expand upon the mythology without it feeling too much, you know? And so, you know, a lot of people like the mysterious nature of Michael Myers, but they also want to know more about Michael Myers. And so finding that balance is something that Rob Zombie, I don't think, could do, but I'm curious to see if David Gordon Green does it.
You know, but why not just reboot the entire series? I mean, they've done that before, like movie studios. Why not just do it this time instead of just be like, oh, we're just going to make a true sequel?
Well, they kind of did with Rob Zombie's movies. They rebooted the whole thing, and that didn't really work that well. So I guess they're still trying to find that access point. And I think they're teaming up with Jason Blum from Blumhouse, which, you know, he does a lot of the low-budget horror movies right now in a really fun way. He did Get Out. And so I think that, you know, this is, I guess, the last attempt. You know, they're still trying to do it with Friday the 13th a little bit. Nightmare on Elm Street, they tried to reboot that one. So they're trying to find these access points because they know these characters are still very popular. You still see a Michael Myers mask all the time, you know, and so I think they're struggling, you know. Same with the Universal Monsters. They're struggling a little bit there. They know Dracula and Frankenstein and, you know, Creature from the Black Lagoon and The Mummy, these are all really popular characters, you know, and beloved characters that deserve more stories, and they can tell more stories about them, but just how do you do it so this way it's still kind of true to the character and also, you know, takes it in another direction that maybe we haven't seen yet. And that's the hard part about landing them, and so we'll see. We'll see. I'm curious. I mean, if anybody's going to do it, this is the run right here. This, the crew that's on this new Halloween, if they don't get it right, then you know what? I think it's time to just retire Michael Myers, watch the original Halloween, and let it be. Even John Carpenter is coming back, I think, to do the music. So this is the crew that should land it. And if they don't, then I think it'll be we'll bid farewell to Mr. Myers.
You know, if they bid farewell to in movies, what they should do is just translate it into video games. And I think it would probably do better there anyways.
Yeah. They did a Halloween video game. It was a Friday the 13th video game.
It was Friday the 13th.
Yeah, it was really cool. A lot of my friends were playing it. And that was cool, that you can kind of play with your friends. And you're a camp counselor or you're Jason. And so, yeah, that, like, kind of having that stuff is really fun, too. And Scream managed to kind of be a successful TV series for a little bit, which was interesting. So, you know, sometimes you can reboot this stuff on TV in some way. But, that, you know, I think Scream lends itself to TV more than something like Halloween, because I feel like every episode of Halloween would be the same episode. you know, but you have stuff like Stranger Things, which is, I think, sort of in the spirit of those old kind of 80s creepy sci-fi fantasy movies, and they do a really good job at kind of holding your attention for multiple episodes.
For the month of December, well, are there any, like, hidden gems that we should look out for?
Well, you know, this is one of my favorite times of the year, because you have both blockbusters and you have some of these smaller movies that a lot of studios think are their biggest awards contenders. They save them to the end of the year, so this way they're fresh in Oscar voters' minds. So December has a little bit of both. You have your Star Wars The Last Jedi and your Jumanji, which will probably, and Pitch Perfect 3, probably going to be the biggest movies of December. But then tucked in there, you also have films like The Shape of Water from Guillermo del Toro, which is a beautiful sort of fairy tale fantasy about a woman, a mute woman, who befriends a creature that's being kept in the laboratory where she's kind of like a janitor there. And she befriends the creature and then tries to rescue the creature from the lab without being spotted by the villainous Michael Shannon, who's like a security enforcer there. Fantastic movie, maybe Guillermo del Toro's best movie. He says it's his favorite movie. I was actually just speaking to him last night, talking to him about the film. And Doug Jones plays the creature, and of course Doug Jones does a really good job. So that's a film that's coming out in December that I highly recommend. There's also a movie called I, Tanya, about the Tanya Harding story. You know, if you're kind of a kid from the early 90s, or you were around and aware of the news cycle in the early 90s, and of course you know who Tanya Harding is, former Olympian who was wrapped up in this conspiracy to injure one of the women that was competing alongside her for the U.S. Olympic team, Nancy Kerrigan. Margot Robbie plays Tanya Harding. Allison Janney plays Tanya Harding's mother. And I think both of those women will be in the awards conversation. Kind of a biting dark comedy. People calling it the Goodfellas of ice skating. One of my favorite movies of the year. I saw it a couple of months ago. And so I would say The Shape of Water, I, Tanya, are two hidden gems that I highly recommend.
My God, I, Tanya, I remember that as a kid. I didn't understand it, but I remember the video clips, Nancy Kerrigan holding her knee. That was so, yeah. It was surreal. I mean, yeah. Like some dude in a ski mask just popped out with this lead pipe and was like, what just happened?
I know. It's crazy. It's really, really crazy. And this, I think, does a good job at humanizing Tanya Harding and kind of showing what role she did or did not actually play in that whole thing happening. And I think you kind of walk out feeling bad for her, and it may even redeem her to a certain degree. You know, I think a lot of people blame her for that and not necessarily the morons that surrounded her. And it really was the morons who surrounded her who conspired to commit that crime. And so, you know, I'm curious to see how people feel about Tanya Harding after this movie comes out. Because I felt differently about her.
Shape of Water, could you... Okay, so I'm curious. Is Doug Jones the guy who always plays creatures in movies? Because that sounds familiar.
He does.
Yes, the creature guy,
play,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, he is a creature guy. He's, you know, he's definitely Guillermo del Toro's go-to creature guy. And I was talking to him last night, too, and you could see why. He's like 6'3", 6'4". He's really skinny, and he's just really animated and really nice and warm, a warm gentleman. And you could tell how he can kind of sink into these roles. And I asked him, I said, you know, what did you watch to play this creature? Did you watch anything specific? And he says, I watched a lot of the Hallmark Channel, believe it or not. Those Lifetime movies, like that's what he was watching, these the schmaltzy sort of programs to kind of get into that sense of wonder and of love that this character inhabits, you know, because like Guillermo del Toro told me, I said, what creature features did you watch while getting ready for this movie? He goes, none. He goes, it's in my DNA. I didn't watch any creature. I watched musicals. I watched love stories. And so, you know, Doug Jones did the same thing. I thought it was a really interesting approach to characters, and I've never heard somebody say that they watched a lot of the Hallmark Channel while preparing for a role to play a monster, and so that was really interesting to me, and he does a really good job of it, too. But, you know, another thing we were talking about last night is, like, these kinds of roles aren't looked at, you know, when it comes to Oscars and stuff like that, you know, and which is a shame, because him, also Andy Serkis from War for the Planet of the Apes, put such interesting, fascinating performances behind these characters, and they're not rewarded at the Academy Awards. And so I hope in the next couple of years they figure out a way to reward those types of performances.
Yeah, that is so true, because I absolutely love Doug Jones. Everything he does, you're right about him being so animated. Because when you're in costume, you really have to be, because your face, you lose that. You lose the facial expression, so you have to do it with your hands and your body movements. And I absolutely love when he does creature stuff, and he's really good. Puppeteers, I miss that too. And people don't get enough credit for doing that kind of work either.
Yeah, they don't get enough credit, and so... you know, and same goes for the people that create that stuff, you know, the digital artists who create the characters when they're motion capture, and the costume designers who create those physical costumes that they wear. So yeah, you know, I think they're kind of like the unsung heroes of Hollywood. Nobody knows their names. There are many of them, but they really do sort of, they're the ones that bring that magic to the movies, and they deserve more love, more attention.
Speaking of love and attention, my mother absolutely loves Pitch Perfect, the series. I don't understand it. Pitch Perfect is funny, but, like, why a third movie? Do you think it warranted that?
You know, I think this is going to be the last Pitch Perfect movie, but and I think they're taking it in a direction that logically makes sense. You know, all of the women that, you know, kind of formed this group have all separated, and they all reunite to, I think, take on a much younger, maybe more talented group of singers and performers. And so can they do it? And so I think it's a logical kind of trilogy, a logical arc for this crew. And I think, you know, a lot of people like music in movies. I think one thing that we've seen in the last couple of years, and maybe it's even something that Frozen helped you know, make popular again, and also... what was that show on Fox that
Glee?
I think Pitch Perfect was born from? Glee, yeah. Glee, I think, in the live-action sense, Frozen in the animated sense, when both of those kind of hit, they reminded us why we love music in our TV and our movies. And so, you know, Pitch Perfect really was a child out of Glee, off the popularity of that. And, you know, they did a good job of sort of mixing this kind of coming-of-age high school sort of set drama, competition drama, with, you know, really popular songs and jokes and a fun cast. And so I think that's why it was so popular. But, yeah, I think it's run its course by now. And not to say that we won't see something else kind of pop up in its place that's similar. I think we will. But, you know, I think people want music in their movies right now. The Greatest Showman is another movie that's coming out in December. Big movie musical. 11 songs written by the guys that wrote the songs for La La Land last year, and then look at La La Land last year. I think, you know, between live action and animated, you know, people really want more music in their content, and so Hollywood's listening, and they're giving it to them.
Oh, wow, you are so right. There are so many musicals right now. I didn't even realize that. You're right, La La Land, you got, oh, wow, I guess people do like it.
Yeah, it's a hot trend right now. People want more music in their movies, and so I think the original musicals are doing a little bit better than the ones that they're adapting. So that's why La La Land, The Greatest Showman, we're starting to see more original movie musicals versus, you know, another adaptation of Les Mis or Phantom of the Opera or Cats or something like that. So, you know, really interesting. Of course, Hamilton is the one that I'm waiting for. That's the movie musical. Also, Dear Evan Hansen. I'm from New York. I'm a big Broadway fan. And so of the musicals that I've seen of late, you know, Hamilton and Dear Evan Hansen are musicals that I would not complain about if we got movies of them, and I'm sure at some point we will get movies of them.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find you at?
You can find me at Fandango and also on Twitter at Eric with a K Davis.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapaine.com. That's masonverapaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.